The president's daily briefing has changed quite a bit, but a couple of things have stayed the same. Some of those are in the name itself. It is still the president's book. It is produced for the president personally, and it is still brief. That is, it is still a relatively short collection of the most pressing issues that the nation's secret intelligence and analysis can inform the president about each day. But it does change with each president, especially depending on each president's wishes for his book in terms of how he wants to receive it, when he wants to receive it, and who else working for him is allowed to see it.
How has that changed?
It's changed in several ways, Charlie. In one way, it has changed in terms of the timing. Most presidents have chosen to receive their president's daily briefing at the beginning of each working day, and that helps set the stage for the things that he will have to confront during the day on the international stage. But Lyndon Johnson made a change back in the 1960s. He did a lot of work in bed at night, and he decided he wanted his PDB delivered to him late in the evening so he could go through it in the evening instead. That's not a significant change in terms of the content. It still has to carry the most important things the president needs to see every day, but it sure does change the work schedule of those producing it. Instead of staying up overnight to put in last-minute developments, it's a little easier on the work schedule to put in last-minute developments that come in the late afternoon before you go home at the end of a normal workday.
Who puts it together?
Traditionally, the Central Intelligence Agency has produced it, starting back in June of 1961, when President Kennedy's military assistant asked for a personally focused summary of a whole range of intelligence that was reaching the White House. The CIA pulled something together overnight, called it the President's Intelligence Checklist, and the forerunner of the PDB was born. Under Lyndon Johnson, it changed the name to the President's Daily Brief, and the CIA kept producing it for decades. In the wake of the September 11th attacks and the investigation into the intelligence after that, the U.S. government created the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. And at that point, about 10 years ago now, the Office of the DNI took over responsibility for producing and delivering the President's Daily Brief each day.
And is it good at answering the question, what should the president pay attention to each day?
Well, that's something that only the presidents and the few people that the presidents have designated to receive it can truly answer, because the contents of the vast majority of presidents' daily briefs from the past 50 years remain classified. Most of the presidents that I talk to, and the others that I talk to in addition to the presidents, give a general answer of yes, but. That is, they say, yes, it did a good job at doing many things, but we always want more. We would always like it to be even better. And that's understandable, because if you think about it, by the time a decision gets to the desk of the President of the United States, by definition, it's a tough problem, or it would have been worked out somewhere else in the bureaucracy. So usually there are no easy solutions to be had, and sometimes not enough information to have confidence in the decision you're going to make. Not surprising to me that presidents and others would always like more in their daily intelligence report.
Have people been relatively happy, not just the presidents, but the small circle of advisors that get it, with the level of detail that and information that they're given? Does it truly inform them?
It's a mixed bag, and it's a mixed bag for logical and understandable reasons. At one level, the president's daily brief is produced for the president, so others who are receiving it may have more specific responsibilities. I'll give you some examples. Traditionally, through its history, the president's daily brief has also gone to officers like the Secretary of State, responsible for the nation's diplomacy, and the Secretary of Defense, responsible for the armed forces. They might have an interest in some more specific aspects of the diplomatic function or the military function that the president simply doesn't need to know at the same level of detail. Now, each major national security department also has individual intelligence agencies to serve the needs of their own bosses, but when it comes to the president's daily brief itself, the most common answer I heard from the 100 or so people that I interviewed from the past 5 decades who have seen it is that most of them got the PDB to read what was in it, perhaps help them do their jobs, but also to find out what the president was seeing. Because if a meeting came up later that day on a topic that related to what was in the PDB, they wanted to know what the president had read to know where his mind was on that topic.
You've made the claim in writing the book that nobody else had really tackled this before. This document gets the president's ears and eyes through a briefing by a case officer that you occasionally gave and through the document itself. That is significant attention and time spent on this. That alone renders it important in shaping the chief executive's mind and the minds of his top advisors, as you just pointed out. Why has nobody tackled this before?
Well, there are a few reasons that make sense to me. First of all, although it has been mentioned over the years, it has not received as much attention as many other aspects of the presidency. That is, because it's a very secret, tightly held document, you don't have a lot of people talking about it publicly. Another reason is because many people don't realize that the president spends quite a bit of time and attention on it, because it is something that is never with the press in the Oval Office. It's something that is done behind closed doors with a small circle of people, whether the president is reading it or whether he's receiving an actual briefing. Another aspect of it is that there was a widespread belief, even among people in the U.S. government, and more specifically, even among people in the Central Intelligence Agency, that the existence of the president's daily brief for decades was itself classified. I had one officer who worked there as a graduate school fellow tell me that he was explicitly told the combination of the three words, presidents, daily, and brief, when used together, were classified. That's a little silly if you think about it, because, in fact, there were many press stories from those decades, the memoirs of presidents, and other places where the PDB was mentioned openly and without any hint of the veil of secrecy supposedly there. The funny part is that I asked Bob Gates about this, because there had been several sources that said they heard that Bob Gates, who was director of Central Intelligence for George H.W. Bush back in the early 1990s, several sources said, I remember when Bob Gates declassified the existence of the president's daily brief. When I asked Dr. Gates about it, he laughed and said, I did not declassify the president's daily brief. I figured it was already declassified. So there is that mythology around it, that there's something special, that there's something that can't be discussed. The final aspect of it is we can't see most of what's in the president's daily briefs. The big change there recently, last year, for the first time ever, a large group of presidential intelligence documents were declassified from the John F. Kennedy and the Lyndon Johnson administrations so that we could get a glimpse into some of this presidential intelligence.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with David Preece, the author of The President's Book of Secrets. He's an Illinois Wesleyan University grad. Would you share a moment, as you're able, and as it's not classified, from your own experience that shows how presidents have engaged this material?
Well, the book is not a memoir, but a no-kidding history. I chose not to write about myself and my experiences, despite those unclassified experiences. But I can mention that when I did have the opportunity to brief the president's daily brief to some senior customers in the George W. Bush administration, it was very impressive to me. I found that my briefing customers were uniformly receptive, eager, serious recipients of intelligence material, asking impressive questions about the information on a whole range of national security issues. They were thankful for the answers and the insights they got. They were not always happy. They always would like more information to help them make the tough decisions. But I did find that people were very grateful for the service that was provided.
Publishers Weekly noted this is a stimulating, if uncritical, look at this topic.
Sure.
And you are presenting a case where everybody's trying really hard to do their job. But Washington is a place of politics, even if you're in an agency that supports the executive. How has that crept in?
Indeed. From the research that I did and speaking to so many people who either produced the Daily Book of Secrets or received it, I found that there was a lot of agreement that the goal of the analysts writing information for the president was to provide accurate, timely, and objective information from classified and unclassified sources alike to help the president defend the homeland and protect U.S. interests abroad. By putting something into the president's daily brief, at some level, yes, you are affecting the agenda because the president is informed about something. This is why, again, according to the wide range of interviews that I conducted, this is why people like the National Security Advisor to the president are always kept tightly in the loop as to what is in the president's daily brief so that they can have the conversation with the president about what effect this might have on policy. The mission of intelligence is to inform the policy, not to make the policy, and that is a fine line to walk. I was impressed in all of the interviews I did with the leaders of the intelligence community for the last several decades how firmly they believed in that principle, that the intelligence mission did rely on objective analysis and not the politicization of a message to get across a personal point of view to the president.
Times the analysts got it wrong, times they got it spectacularly right. Share a couple?
Yeah, and there have been both, in fact. There were some cases where the predictions in the president's daily brief, based on limited information, based on contradictory information, or based on faults in logic and argumentation, clearly were wrong. The most notable example is the 1973 war in the Middle East, when Egypt conducted a surprise attack on Israel. There was no warning of that in the president's daily brief, something that still bothers some of the officers involved to this day. Now, to be fair, even one of the toughest customers of the Central Intelligence Agency, Dr. Henry Kissinger, who at the time was the National Security Advisor to the president, he admits that this was not just an intelligence failure, it was a political failure, that no one believed that this would happen. But it clearly was an intelligence failure because the prediction was not made. On the other hand, there have been some great successes. One of the enduring myths about intelligence overall, and the president's daily brief in particular, is that it did a bad job predicting the fall of the Soviet Union. Well, in fact, some events, like an attempted coup against Mikhail Gorbachev, were predicted fairly well in the president's daily brief. We'll have to leave it to the historians of the future, though, to look at the track record of the PDB's predictions over the long term, because so much of the material is still under lock and key, and we won't be able to match that up against events for some time.
Over the range of your experience and the range of documents you've studied that were declassified, has it improved in quality over the decades?
I don't think we can talk about the quality issue without understanding the change in the times. The first version of the PDB that was produced, the President's Intelligence Checklist for John F. Kennedy, was quite literally produced overnight by a few analysts at CIA who ran a draft by the military aide to the president, and then it was presented in its first inaugural issue to President Kennedy the very next day with very little bureaucratic attention to it within the Central Intelligence Agency itself. I can't imagine that happening now in one of the large national security bureaucracies. Simply hard to believe that something could get out the door like that. I don't know what President Obama's reaction to the daily PDBs he sees is, but I suspect if he received something like John F. Kennedy's President's Intelligence Checklist, he would find it amateurish and underwhelming because it was presented so informally, and he might just ignore it, or more likely ask for something more robust. And this is also speculation only, as I don't see each day's PDB now, but I suspect if John F. Kennedy were to see today's PDB, he would find it full of dense, thick prose, and he would just ignore it because he liked the casual conversational style of the product he received. It really does depend on each president's predilections and each president's preferences for what kind of product they get. In terms of the coverage, there is no question that the president's daily brief has to be more solid now than it was back then because of the incredible advances that have been made in intelligence collection and analysis.
Today, it's delivered sometimes on iPad in this electronic age with such fast-changing data available. Is a single daily briefing still a useful framework? How should the president and his or her advisors budget their energy and time? Would it be better packaged in shorter bites throughout the day as things change, or what's the utility of the document today, and how should it be re-envisioned?
Well, for quick breaking news, the President's Daily Brief may not be the ideal vehicle because it is an analytic document. It is something that provides an assessment or a judgment of a situation involving some uncertainty overseas. The President is also served in the White House by the Situation Room, which can present him on a minute's notice information from virtually anywhere in the world from a whole range of sources. So I think the President is very well served by a very large group of people in different ways, ensuring information gets to his desk. The President's Daily Brief does not carry all of that.
So this is a good table setter and remains a good table setter.
Indeed.
You've said that your goal is not to do a whole lot of historical analysis, but that you'll leave that to others. What is your next look at this or bite at?
Well, Charlie, let me put a caveat on that. The historical analysis of the actual content of the President's Daily Brief, which we cannot see yet for classification reasons, that is something that will have to stay on hold. The way in which various presidents have used it and some of the issues surrounding its use, that is fair play, ranging from President Nixon, who appeared to not take the President's Daily Brief too seriously, if he even read it at all the way to someone like President George H.W. Bush, who took a briefing from a CIA working-level professional every day of his administration and encouraged his son to do the same, such that both Presidents Bush saw the PDB every morning, had a discussion in it as part of an actual live briefing. One might say that that's an area that deserves further attention to see how the foreign policy decisions were affected by the decision whether or not to take a briefing or the decision whom to include in the distribution list of the PDB itself.
Much of the data on the Obama administration is probably hard to come by. And
true.
And it also remains a live political environment, so it may be hard to suss out from what people are actually saying what is historically valuable from what is political. But what did you find out about the Obama administration's use of the Daily Brief?
Well, a couple of things stand out there. One we've talked about briefly before is the technology issue. We can go back to 1970. And I dug out some research documents that showed that a National Security Council contractor presented to National Security Advisor Henry Kissinger a plan whereby he, and eventually President Nixon himself, could receive the Daily Intelligence Report on a computer monitor and then press several buttons to expand the text and read more about a topic, or even to request more information or analysis from the Central Intelligence Agency.
Metatext. Back then.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that was possible, technically, back in 1970. Henry Kissinger essentially gave it a pocket veto, decided not to act on the idea, and he told me when I spoke with him that he probably would not have appreciated that because he didn't even know how to work a computer back in those days. But that was 40-some years before it actually happened, when the PDB went electronic and was presented to President Obama on his iPad. Now, that may just be a change of the medium by which the President's Daily Brief is delivered, but it does open up other options. Ink on a page can do many things, and throughout the history of the President's Daily Brief, there has been a lot of attention to the graphics and the maps and the charts that are put into the book. But on an iPad, there's many more opportunities for interactive graphics, for video, for other things that can bring out the intelligence in a different way. In addition to the information technology side of things, the other issue is who else gets to see the President's Daily Brief. Publicly available information indicates that the distribution of the President's Daily Brief under President Obama has expanded somewhat. Over the years, it has gone back and forth. There's been an ebb and flow to how many people see it. There's a clear advantage to more people seeing the President's Daily Brief. The President, quite simply, can talk to more senior officials about it and make it more useful. On the other hand, the wider the distribution of the President's Daily Brief, perhaps the less presidential it is, because some of the most secret information, some of the most sensitive information, might not even be able to make it in if the PDV goes to 2 or 3 dozen people. In fact, that may have to be briefed to the president separately.
David Priest is Director of Analytic Services for Analytic Advantage, Incorporated. It offers training, mentoring, and consulting to the intelligence community, government offices, and the private sector. He's the author of The President's Book of Secrets. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Charlie.
I'm Charlie Schlenker.